Welcome, everyone. It's good to see you all. I missed y'all while I was away. I hope that whatever you've been doing the last couple of weeks, it has been fun and relaxing and nourishing. And I hope that if you had some calls to catch up on or homework to catch up on, that maybe you used some of our time off in order to do it. And I am just so excited to jump back in with all of you. We are starting today our Befriend Your Fear module, one of my favorite modules. But as you know, I always say module is one of my favorite modules. It's a three session module. Where today we're going to be looking at a lot of the, what I call foundational principles around fear and understanding human nature in relationship to fear. Because we need, as practitioners, to kind of have that basis, to have that understanding of how fear works and how human beings experience it, relate to it, et cetera. And then next week in our training session, I'm going to be taking you step by step through the Befriend Your Fear process, which is a somatic process that activates all four levels of learning and processing. And we're going to get very clear on what each of the steps are, why we want to include each of those steps, how you can adapt them for you. And then in our third session in this module, I'm going to be doing a demo of the process. We may even get to have two demos, possibly next week, one, but for sure. In our third session, I'll be doing a demo, and then we're going to have time to, and this is what I think is so valuable, to really break down everything that happened in the demo, why I made certain choices that I did as a practitioner, what was happening, et cetera, so that you can really, really take it in and embody the technique in deeper ways and continue to really make it yours and your own. What we are learning over this module is the basis of so many other somatic techniques, some of which we'll be looking at as we move through our curriculum for Sacred Depths, others which I teach in Advanced Depth, et cetera. But like what we're really learning here, both conceptually as well as skill-wise, is, in my opinion, the foundation of shadow work, for example, of belief, even rewiring belief work, of resistance work, which we're going to get to, and many, many different types of somatic techniques. So it's really, really exciting. Before we jump in, I know it's been a while since our last training session, and maybe none of you have thought about this at all, which is fine, but I still feel like I just kind of want to, kind of toss it in there. Have our last session we was energetics too, and we really looked pretty deeply at projections that our clients bring into their work with us, and also that we bring into our work with clients. Have you been noticing that a little bit more? Have you been working with it a little bit more, whether it's in client sessions, whether it's projections in other areas of your and relationships in your life, whether it's you as the client with a practitioner? Just take a moment and sense for yourself, even if you haven't been consciously thinking about it, what's really resonating for you personally or practitioner-wise, around this idea of the different projections and dynamics that we bring from other relationships and areas of our lives into any given relationship, particularly client relationships or clients with us. Not going to ask for shares on this, although if you want to share in the chat, please do, and we'll take a look. But this is more just kind of like continuing to bring it forward with us. So if you do want to share in the chat, please do. What's been moving through you? What's been resonating? Victoria is saying your own work around how big you're allowed to get. Yes. Yeah. And then what were the rules in some other relationships? And then how does that show up now? Susan Engel is saying the awareness of projection is essential for those who are nurses to become an instrument of care. I'm so glad that you're bringing that into the conversation, Susan. It's so true. It's not just coaching relationships that we want to be aware of that, as practitioners, it's all of the relationships. I have been on a little bit over the last month, some of you know, a little bit of a health journey. And I've noticed the projections that I bring in when I speak to medical doctors that I might not necessarily bring in with other practitioners, and have been working to correct that so that I can be as empowered as possible in those relationships. Okay, one other piece I want to just make sure that I mention before we get to our intro to fear. This is a really important piece. Something that is not probably going to be new for most of you, but just important to for us to all continue to remember, that the process of change is a process, right? We want to keep on remembering this as practitioners. We're going to be learning some really incredible techniques. And even with all the breakthroughs and the change and all of that, change is a process. It's not a once and done. And our clients, this might be a little controversial, what I'm about to say. Check it out if it feels true for you. I believe that our clients need to work in order to create results, not just outer results, but inner results as well. Right? It doesn't have to be hard labor, painful labor, but there is work involved. Especially with the technique that we're going to be learning over the next few weeks, it's easy to yield breakthroughs quickly sometimes. And it's awesome when we can do it. But the longer lasting change is a process. And while it's absolutely true, I believe that quantum leaps can happen in our work with clients. In my experience, the quantum leaps happen. It looks like a quantum leap on the outside, but really, if we look more closely, it's a series of consistent work and consistent work and a much longer process of change. And we're just kind of seeing like the last domino drop when the quantum leap happens. What we're gonna also start to see as we continue to move through our modules in the curriculum is that in order to yield change, and part of this idea of it's a process, is that we might work a befriend your fear process, and then we might work a resistance archetype process, and then we might work something else. And it's like one is building on the next and building on the next over time to yield the more long-lasting results. And so I'll give just a quick example from my own life on this, and hopefully it's helpful. A couple years ago, I made a really, really big decision in my business. I decided that I was going to take at least 6 months of a sabbatical from private client. I'm going to keep on running all of my programs, but I needed more space in my calendar. I needed more space for me. And I was going to take a break from private work. Now, that sounds easy enough to say, but I had so much fear around doing this. What were my private clients going to think? Would they think that I was going to abandon them? What if I don't fill the programs? My private work was all is always so reliable. What if there isn't going to be money? On and on and on and on. So much so that really, I had already wanted to take a sabbatical a year earlier, but I wasn't ready yet on the inner level. Some people might be. I just had all the fears, right? All the things. And so first, I worked on the fear that my clients were going to be upset with me. I was going to let everybody work towards the end of our contracts. I wasn't going to break contracts in the middle, right? But I was still worried that people would be upset, or I was letting them, right? So first, I had to work through that. Then I had to work through some pieces around my judge of how could I like feel so privileged to just let go of this thing, right? And then I had to work through limiting beliefs about that I need to always do more in order to receive more, right? And it was a step-by-step process to get to that point of sharing with my clients that I was going to take a sabbatical. Sometimes it'll happen in a session, right? A client will be ready and ripe. They may not have as many fears as I tend to have around everything, right? And you'll do the work and they're gonna take a big action like that. Other times it's gonna take some time. And that's okay. Right. The moment that we expect it to happen overnight is the moment that we're no longer present to the real work with our clients. Okay. So I developed the term befriending your fear nearly 20 years ago. Actually, before I go there, I see there's a couple of comments in the chat. I just want to make sure I get to them. Thanks for saying happy birthday. It was my birthday yesterday. Susan Hagen is recognizing a shift with the projections and the expectation of being judged. I'm so glad, Marla, you don't think what I shared was controversial. Good. Yeah. Thanks, Susan. And Rachel is saying it's such a good reminder on this process of change because sometimes it can feel like we're doing something wrong if it doesn't happen all in one session, right? And then remember, energy follows energy. If we think it should have happened all in one session as practitioners, how is our client not going to think that, right? And then not have patience with themselves and their process and their humanity. Right. Golda, I'm glad that it feels good to be back here. Feels good for me too. Okay. Let's talk about fear. So I came up with the term Befriending Your Fear nearly 20 years ago, after many encounters and experiences with both my own fear as well as that of my clients. And 20, when I first came up with the term, what I'm about to say next was absolutely radical for the transformational industry. Now, years later, not so much so, but it's still important to say. The concept of befriending your fears is very different than conquering your fears, than slaying your fears, than destroying your fears. We are not talking about being in a combative relationship with our fears. We're going to talk a lot more on this, but just to set the stage, we are looking at making friends with fears. And I'm going to put this out there, and hopefully through our work today, you'll see this more and more. Befriending your fears is even different than letting go of your fears. We're going to actually talk about why the goal is not to let go of the fears. We don't want that, actually. We're looking at being in a better relationship with fears. Right. So there's a completely different stratosphere than when we hear out there the slay your fears, destroy your fears, all of that. And one of the biggest reasons why it's so important that we approach fear through this lens, through this perspective of becoming friends and improving the relationship, is because, and you might know this for yourself, if you try to hate on, criticize, slay, vanquish, avoid, ignore, destroy, all the other things, the fears, usually the result is that they become stronger, not smaller. And I always like with this topic, I always like to tell the story. Some of you may have heard me share this before and somewhere else, of something I saw on Sesame Street when I was 5 years old that I still remember to this day. It was one of those cartoons that often they had the little cartoons on Sesame Street. And there was a conversation between the sun and the wind. There was a man walking down the street with a raincoat and a hat. And the wind says to the sun, "Hey, sun, I bet you that I'm stronger than you. I bet you I can get that coat and that hat off the man way quicker than you can." And the sun says, "All right, I'm game. Let's see." And so the wind goes first. And in order to get the hat and the coat off the man with force, with aggressive force, the wind blows and blows and blows and tries to blow the hat and the coat off of the man. But what happens? The man just clings on tightly to the hat and the coat, trying to keep it on. And then eventually the wind gives up and says, "All right, son, you go for it," right? And what does the sun do? The sun lovingly shines and brings warmth and shines and brings warmth until eventually the man on his own avail gets warm enough that he takes off the hat and the coat. So I always think about this as such a beautiful metaphor for what we're doing when we're befriending fears. We don't want to be like the wind. We want to be like the sun. We want to make friends with the fear. And as we do, and as we help our clients to do this, what happens is that the fears sabotage you less and manage you less and hold you back less. Okay. So from there, the next thing that I want to remind you of, something that hopefully at this point in the program, because I've probably mentioned it a number of times, you all know, but I want to mention it again and go a little deeper with it. This is so important for us to remember as practitioners and as humans when we're working with our own fears. Fear is normal. There is nothing abnormal about having a fear. It is common and it is normal. And we actually want to expect that probably a fear of some sort is going to come up when we or when a client is in the process of stepping into the next thing for themselves. When we step into the next thing, something that we really want, fear is often part of the human process of that and of up-leveling and of expansion. There is nothing wrong with fear or experiencing fear. It's all about how we navigate it. One thing that happens for a lot of people is that they start to go after something they want, and the fear comes up, and because they're feeling the fear, they think that it means that they can't have or achieve the thing that they want. That's not what it means. It just means that you're a human being experiencing fear because it's a normal part of the process to experience fear when you're going after something that you want. It doesn't mean that there's anything wrong with you, and it doesn't mean that you're not whole and complete if you are experiencing fear. And I want to say that one again because it's so important. It doesn't mean that you're not whole and complete if you are experiencing fear. In our culture, and I think even in the coaching industry, fear has been stigmatized and even pathologized in a way. But again, it's normal. And I'm going to take it a step further. It is healthy to experience fear, right? That's because the fear is there to protect us. We have developed internally a fear of something because we've learned from past experiences that in order to survive, we need to watch out for certain things. Now, that may not be true in present anymore, the things that we need to watch out for. We're gonna get there, right? But I want to remind you that that fears, we have adapted our fears in order to survive, right? At some point in our life, there was a real threat in front of us. It's a survival mechanism. And because it's a survival mechanism, this is another reason why we don't want to destroy it or even let it go. We want to respect it and work in a different way with it. And the metaphor that I always give when I talk about this is the smoke detector in the kitchen. So we need the smoke detector in the kitchen, right? Because there might be a fire in the house. And that smoke detector, right? Like our fear is like fire, fire, get water, leave that, right? Whatever it is. Sometimes the smoke detector is a little too sensitive and it mistakes burnt toast with a fire in the house, right? Similar to our fear. But again, we want to like get new batteries, correct, correct things with or shift things with the smoke detector, but we don't want to get rid of it. We don't even want to fix fear. Instead, we want to assess, is this fear helpful in the current situation? Or is this fear unhelpful? Or what ways is it helpful right now? And in what ways is it not helpful right now? And then make proper adjustments around our actions or reorientations based on the assessment. For what it's worth, this is just my theory. I don't know this to be true, but I think it is. I don't think fear ever really goes away. And I don't think it's supposed to. All right, let's pause here for a moment. I'd love to hear from one or two of you what's resonating so far, what's feeling important, what are you seeing? Yeah, Anisha is saying, I see fear as a natural response to change. I so agree with you. And I'll kind of like toss this in to just put a little more on this really important comment that Nisha's saying. It has been shown through studies that any change in status activates the nervous system. This can be a positive change in status too. Any change in status activates the nervous system, right? So, and we'll see more next week than this week. That's why part of the befriending process is also working with the nervous system to be regulated in the face of fear. Rachel's saying it feels important that part of our job as a coach is to normalize the feeling of fear for our clients. Yes, right? Because so much of what our clients are getting from culture and industry and all of that is there's something wrong with me. If I'm feeling fear, I'm never going to be able to move forward, right? And energy follows energy. We want to normalize that fear is just part of the process. Anyone want to share voice to voice? I'd love to hear someone else's voice before we move on. Yeah, and Susan is connecting the hat, the sun and wind story with emotional safety. Yes, which is what we want to create. And you'll see when we get to the technique next week in the container. All right, I'll ask some questions and then we'll have more opportunity. Maybe I'll hear some of your voices then. Oh, Victoria wants to share. Great.
Hi, I just figured I'd jump in. Disclaimer, we have a kiddo who it's still summer, so I might have to. Yeah, I just thought I'd raise my hand to talk about like Yeah, how radical this is, like in our overculture. It feels like such important work, and it feels like the friendliest way to do the work that's most needed is to really go inside our systems and make friends with the parts of us that are struggling, that like fear is the result of that struggle.
Yes. I mean, we're generally trained to hate on those parts and criticize those parts and not give those parts love. And this is about doing the exact opposite of that.
Yeah, it's really important. Really, really important.
Yeah, thank you, Maria.
My words are formulating, but what I think about fear, it's a base. It's like a basic instinct to survive. And so there's a lot of wisdom in the fear, right? And a lot of experience. And so once we can get a handle of our fear and our instinct, then you align in a healthy way with that, then your intuition unlocks. But your intuition is not base. The fear and instinct are base. They're down in your survival, deep inside. But you can get a handle on that. Then once your base is stable and you know how to navigate wisely through fear, then your intuition can just come online real easy.
Yes. Yeah, you can
And so
make
that's what I'm
such better
hearing is
decisions.
how to befriend it. Yeah, to befriend it, then you have access to intuition and instinct.
Yes. Yeah, I love how you're putting it. Yes. Okay,
Yeah.
good. So, Lara, and then we're gonna move on to some questions. Lara.
Hi, so I'm thinking about this with my Alexander work, and the way this looks like in the body is, you know, somebody's trying to punch you in the face. What are you going to do? Like, you're naturally going to bring your hands or your arm up to cover your face. And then, but if that happens, if that's happening multiple times a day, you know, like throughout your childhood, you're getting hit all the time, you're just going to walk around with your arms in front of your face all the time because you're protecting yourself. You're literally protecting yourself from physical harm. And then what's going to happen? You know, your shoulders are going to be sore and your back's going to be sore. And then you're going to be going, what's wrong with my shoulder? Why does my back hurt all the time? I need to fix this shoulder. I need to fix this back.
Yeah.
And I need to slay it. What are, you know, all the words you said? And really, we just need to, yeah, like you said, be friends with it and say, you know, shoulder, like I really appreciate you holding my hands up here to protect my face, but I'm okay now. I'm an adult. Nobody's trying to hit me. And you can just let the shoulders go back to doing what they were meant to do, and you know, the pain goes away.
I love it. Yes, it's such another great metaphor. Thank you. Yes. So let me ask you all this. I have a feeling all of you have already started answering this question for yourself anyway. But just to give you a moment to do some journaling on it, even if you've known better, right? Even if this isn't the first time that you've considered what we're talking about right now, how have you approached fear? Have you seen it as a problem? What have you believed about fear for yourself, for your clients? What are some of those old beliefs and ideas that might still come sometimes? What are some of those beliefs? How have you approached fear? So Nisha's saying in the chat, I really connect to wanting to avoid my fear because of the discomfort. That is such a biggie, right? We want to avoid the discomfort. So we want to avoid the fear because there is discomfort at first in connecting with the fear. I want to remind everyone, and we'll look at this more deeply in a couple of weeks. But for now, I want to remind everyone, this is important for us personally and as practitioners to remember that there is a vital difference between discomfort and pain. Most people conflate discomfort and pain. They think of them as the same thing, but they're actually very different. We do want to avoid pain, but actually sometimes we really want to lean in to discomfort. And I share this also because sometimes as practitioners, the very best thing for a client that we can do is hold the space for them to lean into their discomfort, right? And if we are scared, we want to be avoiding discomfort, especially if we're conflating it with pain, it will work against sessions. Not saying that's what's going on for you, Nisha, but just because you opened up this topic, just want to put that out there. Susan is saying one of the old beliefs for her is that fear is annoying. I know, it's so annoying. And a dismaying barrier or block that gets in the way, right? So this is another great example. Again, first, it starts with us as practitioners. Part of our energetics are the beliefs that we bring to the container. If a client shows up with a fear and it's like they're having trouble with it, if our go-to belief is this is annoying or this is a dismaying barrier, it's getting in the way, that's going to lead to very different session and outcomes than, oh my gosh, my client is having a fear. This is normal because they're in a growth process, right? Like this is actually, they're in it. It's how they're towards their goal because fear is coming up. Yay, right? And then of course we want to work with it. But right, just the difference in that energetic. Subi is also talking about avoiding it, right? Push through to avoid feeling it. Yeah. Juniper is saying, I get into my head and go in circles asking, is this intuition or is this fear? My hope, Juniper, is by the time we get through this module, you'll have a couple of ways of distinguishing between that even more. But the very first step always is how are we being friendly or not friendly to the fear? Because as Maria said, we actually can't access the intuition if we are being combative with the fear. Yep. Kristen saying, I shrink and run from it. I've definitely seen it as a problem and a liability. Yep. I feel it keeps me stuck and that I cave to fear so easily and allow them to run my life and keep me hidden in obscurity. You're not the only one. Yeah, so we want to hopefully through this work, we're going to start to shift just even that perspective on fear. Dawn is asking about how to, some fears go extreme into phobia, how to approach these. Hopefully not today, Dawn, but as we go step by step through the process, that will become clear. And then of course, ask questions as we go. I'm seeing a lot of pushing through also in the chat. Right, because that's the other thing. That's another thing that can come up so much. You know, just like just push through the fear, right? And again, I will say like there is a moment for that, but not if we haven't first established an equitable relationship with the fear, a loving relationship with the fear. Because just the push through it, either the clinging, right, from that story, like the clinging on is gonna happen even more. Or if we just push through, we actually might be bypassing intuition on something like this isn't right, right? This in front of me isn't right for me. So that's why we do want to go through this process, because sometimes the fear is actually sensing a fire in the kitchen for real, not mistaking the burnt toast. Okay. So this leads us to another foundational principle that I want us to think about for a little bit. There's always something to risk. There's always something to risk. When we create a big goal for ourselves, and by big, I don't mean, you know, our 10-year business plan. It might be like setting a boundary with someone that we haven't set yet, right? When we set a goal for ourselves, there's always something to risk. There is always some relationship or aspect of a relationship to risk. There's always a long-held belief or value that might be at risk. Maybe there's a physical object that's at risk. Maybe there's an idea about yourself that's at risk. It's almost like jumping from one edge of a cliff to another. You can't get to the other edge of the cliff without giving up being on this edge of the cliff, right? So there is always, now it doesn't mean you're gonna let go of it. It doesn't mean, you know, it's gonna be left behind, but we can't know that until we get to the other place, and we have to be willing to risk something. Right. So, for example, setting a boundary, let's say with a parent that's overbearing, before we set that boundary, maybe what we feel is at risk is the relationship itself with the parent. Or maybe what we feel is at risk is who we are as a good child, or who we are as a generous person who gives a lot of their time. Maybe for some of us, this is personal for me, having a parent that has been sick my whole entire life, maybe the setting the boundary, the risk there is they'll die without me talking to them every day, right? Or whatever. But now it doesn't mean that any of these things are gonna happen, right? But to set the boundary in this case, there is something at risk. And what can oftentimes happen for us, for our clients, is that we're not willing to take the step unless we can be guaranteed that everything is going to stay the same, right? That like nothing will be lost. And if we as practitioners start to buy into that belief also, then it becomes very, very hard to work with fear, right? Because we can't make the risk go away before taking the leap. We can't. So one cognitive way, this isn't the befriend your fear process, but just to kind of put this out there, one cognitive way to approach this piece around fear with the risk is to do a risk assessment with a client, right? So, for example, what are the risks? Even just identifying them first, right? Because sometimes it's just this big blob where we don't even like, we know that there's things that we might lose, but we don't even know. So, number one, what are the risks involved in taking this action? On a scale of 1 to 10, how big are each of those risks and how important are those risks to you? Is it a risk worth taking? Right. So, just starting a little bit, even on the cognitive level, sometimes to pull some of that apart can be really helpful for a client. All right. Let me pause here. Anything that wants to be shared, what's coming together, what you're seeing around this piece of there's always something to risk, and how we have to even lean into that as practitioners when we're working with fear. Victoria.
Sometimes those risks are so almost nonsensical.
Yes.
So what is the, like what's the approach when the body believes something that like makes no real logical sense, but is fully committed to feeling it nonetheless?
Yeah, such a good question. So, first of all, that's why almost always when we're working with fear, we want to bring the body in and have it be a somatic process, which is part of the befriend your fear process. That being said, it can be helpful even just to start, right? Before we even get there, after you name the risk, to say, okay, like a numbers question sometimes on a scale of 1 to 10, how likely is that to actually happen, right? Just to start to give get to the somatic piece, but just to start to give the client's brain like, okay, there's part of me that understands that this is nonsensical. We still have to absolutely work with how it feels in the body, but we do putting the cognitive pieces together, don't underestimate that also. Does that land well?
Yeah, it feels like creating room in the system. And also it kind of gives the system a chance to reorganize a bit, maybe with
Yes.
that kind of understanding.
Yes, to reorganize, it's a little bit of a disruption. And even just in the cognitive understanding, it's a little bit more bringing online a part that knows kind of that
I
it's
was
nonsense,
wondering when
right?
we were
Just
going to get to
starting
that
to like
part.
bring that
Yeah.
more to the forward so that we're working, right? We're working with a little bit more of the pieces.
And just to even start to better know what parts are showing up or what parts are activated.
Yes. Jennifer M.
Hi. I'm not sure if this is the same thing, but it's having me think of the kind of what you're gaining from keeping things the same, even if you're really uncomfortable.
I'm
And
getting there.
how does that relate to the risk? Is it
Yes. Absolutely. You're going exactly where we're going next because there's a risk on both sides, right? There's a risk in staying here, in leaving here, and there's a risk in staying here. And sometimes co-creating that awareness cognitively can be really, really important too. Gen G.
Yeah, kind of on other Jen's comment, it's like what's really coming up is this with risk assessment is control and wanting to control the outcome, because that's such a big part of the human experience, especially with like OC temperaments, like just wanting to make sure all the ducks are in the row, you know. Like the loose cannon is among us, so we're just going to be perfect and, you know, make sure like everything is controlled and having that control temperament. And yeah, that's what kind of came up. And I'm curious. I mean, it sounds like we're maybe going there,
Yeah,
but
I was gonna say give me a minute and
okay.
we're gonna move into some of those pieces. And then if you have follow-up questions, let me know. But absolutely, y'all are going where I want to look next. Bruce is saying in the chat the physiological response, fight, flight, that fear creates in our body makes it hard to access that intuition and a place of calm and safety. Regulation and normalizing is so important to help create a calm state so we can see fear with clarity and curiosity. And it's easier said than done. Yes to all of that. And I want to remind all of you that everything we've been learning so far in Sacred Depths is about creating safe containers. And we're going to go even deeper into that when we look at the process next week. But really, 50% of the process is creating the environment for regulation with the fear. Okay. So, as both Jens started to open up for us, and I'm gonna like kind of put it in a different way, but I think it's related to what the both of you were saying. Another important concept to remember is that in a certain way, our egos like to be comfortable. And this is, when I say ego, what I'm talking about is the part of ourself that believes that where we are right now is the safest, most comfortable place. And because of that, doesn't want to leave that place. In order, as we just looked at a few minutes ago, and I want to say it again, in order to get what we want, if what we want isn't what we have right now, we have to be willing to move away from where we are right now in one way or another. But that being said, when we rely too much on the like comfort is safety and conflating the two, then it becomes very, very hard to leave where we are now. So the ego, or that part of us that we're talking about, wants to keep us in our safety zone. Because that safety zone may not be what feels great, but at least we're familiar with it. We know it. And that part of ourselves that I'm talking about right now is almost always going to choose the familiar over the new. Because it's choosing, in essence, the security of the familiar, right? But here's the thing about this, and this is so important. I know we all know this, but I just want to remind us. So this is kind of a philosophy piece, if you will. And back to Gen G's control piece. ultimately we have no control over our safety and security. And I know that that is a tough thing to like put out there, but I ask you to consider it for a moment, that the thought that we can do all the things to remain safe and secure, it's really a lie that we sometimes need to tell ourselves into thinking that everything is always going to be okay. Yeah, and Gen G is saying, depending on what you're, we're getting there about definitions of safety and security for sure. The truth is that life is always changing. Our status is always changing in life. And in order to be alive, we're actually always moving, always changing. We can be grounded, right? We can root down like the trees do and have that groundedness and that connection and that home base, but we're still always moving and changing. We never know what, we can prepare and prepare and prepare and prepare, but we never know what the future holds. To be human is to be perpetually in the mystery, even when we've done all the preparations and are taking all the action steps. And in that movement and change and in that mystery, there is never full security, right? There is never a full, like, I'm going to be able to hold on to this or have this much money or this kind of health or these kinds of relationships. Even if we do all the things that the experts tell us to do, right? Like all the 5-step habits, there are no guarantees about anything, right? Nothing is secure. And that is the beauty and the risk of being alive. Anything can happen. And that is amazing. And that is terrifying. Right. But I'm really taking the time to be with this, I know, very obvious point, because it's so easy to forget, right? And either for ourselves or for our clients, like, okay, we're going to like the strategies. And if we just do it like this, or we just hold on to this or whatever, then we're going to be okay. Right. But that usually cuts us off from our creativity and brainstorming with our clients, from intuition, from seeing bigger things, from being willing to take the risks. One thing that always helps me and brings me so much comfort and a sense of like truth, for what I would call like truer security for me, is when this comes up, I always go back to the earth and the seasons, because I just do, right? And to remember that every autumn, the leaves fall from the trees. The trees are willing to risk the leaves and trust the mystery and trust the winter, and that the spring is gonna come again. As a, like, just a little side note that I think you'll all find fascinating. I mean, probably a lot of you know this, but I think it's interesting because we're all transformation nerds, and also just like a, it will help you to have this awareness when you're working with your clients. The more securely attached our clients are, the more they have, you know, what's called, we won't get too much into it today, but like secure attachments in their lives, that they feel like they can be safe with other people, usually the more willing they're going to be to not be safe all the time in terms of taking actions. So the more, and I bring it up to say, like, the different tools that we're learning here, we can also use them to support our clients to feel more secure, securely attached to others, and that actually helps them be willing to take more risks, like in their business and other, or in their, right, whatever it is, other areas of their lives. All right, let me pause on this. Anything that wants to be shared or spoken around our egos like to be comfortable and this concept of kind of disrupting this concept of we need to always be secure in, you know, the ways culturally that we think about it. Jen.
I love it. I love it. I love it. You know, it's like I wrote in the chat, you know, front row to the ever unfolding of it all. Like, let's go, you know, wahoo. And I love that you hit the heart of it, which is trust. And I love that you mentioned attachment theory and to be securely attached. Yeah, I don't necessarily have a question there, but I just am like, it's just so true, right? In like learning that trust, because so much of our fear does come from our attachment as infants and, you know, from 0 to 7 or 0 to 14, as they say. And it's just, to me, in my personal work, it's about understanding, you know, our soul's purpose through the lens of relationships and through that lens of attachment. And it's freaking hard doing the work, but we have to do it and practice what we preach. And I love that you said in the beginning, it's a process and it's over and over and over again. To be willing to be comfortable with the unknown on the front row of the ever unfolding of our soul's journey. So yeah, I mean, I'm just like, I'm gushing over here. It's just so good.
Yeah, we need, right? We need to be willing to be in that discomfort and to be in that mystery. Good, yeah. Thank you. Jessica. You there, Jessica? We can't hear you if you're talking.
Okay.
There you are. Okay, great.
I was using my husband's headphones and obviously they don't work on the speaker. yeah, I'm just reflecting on how nuanced it is and sort of, I guess, and I'm really just speaking for myself here, but how sometimes what we think is the risk we should be taking or is like the what we desire or whatever is not always the case. Trying to think how to explain this. Like sometimes choosing the safety or the comfort is the risk. And I wish I had a better example, but the one that's coming to me easily now is like when we first moved to our house, which is this beautiful home, and had been here for like 2 or 3 years, all of a sudden my husband and I both started thinking about moving and looking for different houses. And what I actually recognized is that that was like almost a resistance to the security, like a reaction.
Mm-hmm.
So it can be a little bit counterintuitive. I hope that's making sense. I'm trying to sort of formulate what I'm seeing into words, but yeah, if the baseline of the nervous system has been like chaos and, you know, crazy, we can sort of like err towards that versus the comfort. Yeah.
Absolutely. We're going to look at this concept a little bit more when we get to our rewiring module, how in general, most of us tend away from feeling goodness and more towards the feeling of what's the word I'm looking for? Not chaos, but sorry, it just flew out of my mind. But there's been scientific research even that shows that amoeba amoeba, like one celled organism, will move away from pleasure or like goodness towards the not so much. And we want to rewire that as well. Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Thank you. Thank you. Golda.
Yeah, I'm reflecting back on when I sold my business that I had for 21 years, and it took me 6 years to finally do the thing, like just because I was so, there was so much comfort in security and knowing. And, you know, finally when I did it and I leapt into the lap of mystery, and I just always, yeah, I just felt like I was fighting with mystery at first. And then ultimately, like, it was my practice to get comfortable being uncomfortable. Like, it was literally like, that was my mantra of just free falling. And then ultimately I felt like I was starting to make love with mystery and like enjoy and be in pleasure with the not knowing. And during that time it was, and this just feels important to say, and I hope it's okay to say, but like when the pandemic came, it was like the whole world caught up to not knowing. And like that, I feel like really raised the awareness of we're not in control of the collective. And there was something really soothing about knowing like, oh, we've all caught up to each other.
Yeah. Although culturally we may have forgotten since then, but yes.
Yeah. Okay. But yeah, but like that, like we all kind of like, no, on a spiritual level, like we're not in control and we, you know, we don't, but like, yeah, that was a very, feels like that was a time at the early onset of it, like where we're all like, holy shit, we don't really know. So.
Yes. Yes. Okay, good. Let's take this a little step deeper. I want to give everybody a few minutes to explore this for yourself. I want to invite you to make two columns, and on one column, I want you to write, you can use safety, you can use security. We won't get in semantics of it. You can use both, whatever feels right for you. On one column, I want you to write down, like, I want you to write down, what are some old beliefs about safety and security, about what it means, that haven't been so helpful lately? And then the other column, maybe some new beliefs about what safety and security means, and how you, what you want to believe about it, and how you want to approach safety and security. Right. So at one example, and this can go in so many different directions, I'm getting really detailed here, but maybe like one example of an old belief is, you know, I am not, in order to feel safe in this world, I need to always know X, Y, or Z, right? Whatever it is for you. And then if that's not helpful, what's a different way of approaching that topic? Or, you know, in a more general sense, something that might go in the first column is, I always need to do everything possible to stay secure. But maybe what goes in the new belief column is, there's a difference between safety and security, and I will always do what it takes to be safe, but I don't need to necessarily always be secure, right? I'm just giving you different ideas here to think about. So just think a little bit about how you've been approaching safety, security, and then some new ways that you would like to. another couple moments on this. What's feeling important here? I know, Dawn, this wasn't in relation to this last question, but just want to share what Dawn shared in the chat, the willing to be comfortable being uncomfortable on the journey for growth. Yes. Anybody want to share what's coming through as you're exploring this? What's feeling important here? What are you noticing? Danielle.
I need to plug in my laptop in a moment. It's about to die, but I wanted to really quickly say, in case I get shut off, I keep noticing that it all comes back to, for me, this new belief, and it's been a journey of I can trust myself, which is pretty radical coming from my background of conditioning with very strict religion. Well, maybe not strict, but yes, a certain way of viewing humans, myself. Someone was mentioning 0 to 7 that got embedded pretty deep in a way that I couldn't even necessarily name. And a lot of it for me with the trusting myself now is not just looking back at my own life and how I've navigated things, but more that meeting myself. And that's been somatic too, of reparenting and being the person that I need as these fears come up, giving myself room to lean into what's needed right now. And that's just been a very beautiful reclamation in my life. And I just keep, it was funny. It was like the antidote belief for all these different ones was, but I can trust myself. Like when I think I used to look at the future with quite a bit of dread, I started to name that. And now I can say, no, I can trust myself to navigate things and tweak and pivot as needed.
So beautiful. I love it. It's so different from I need to control every situation and this, right? It's like, I can trust that whatever is going to come up, I've got it. Beautiful. Thank you. Bruce.
Yeah, I was kind of sitting there just allowing for whatever came up for me. And what connected for me and something I've worked on over the years was I have adult children, a couple of them, and that one of them has, you know, definitely the ground has always moved with her. And, you know, there's been some trauma there. And I, you know, I've gotten PTSD just by working with her over the years. And she's in a great place today. And to be, and just the connection between my own safety and security and how it's attached to her being safe and secure. And then knowing that I can let that go, you know, just this was just another little step in the process that came up for me, because I've worked on it for many years of, as she's grown and changed and, you know, being connected to that and just knowing that she's safe and secure today, and how that's affected my own sense of security and safety when you love, you know, the people in your life so much that it affects your own security and safety. It was just a nice little leaning into that just now.
Yeah, I can feel just as you're sharing, it's a little thing, but it's actually such a big thing to lean into that and own that more, that you are feeling more safety and security around for yourself and around all of that.
It's an ongoing process. It's still going to be there, but always. I keep working with it, and it's in my body. So it's something I need to work through in my body, but just the cognitive connection and connecting to it just now in my body was a nice little shift. So
happy to hear it. Yes.
Thanks.
Thank you. Jen.
I love that share, Bruce. It makes me want to call my dad and be like, hey, dad, you're awesome. Everything's great. Everything's good, you know. And it is kind of goes along with what I was gleaning from this is to take ownership and responsibility for our soul's evolution of trusting in the experience. You know, it's like, how do we want to feel? And those core fear beliefs, how do we, I think it was Dawn who shared earlier, who shared two shares ago, was, you know, mentioned this word reclamation. And I just absolutely love that. It's like, how do we shift, you know, I'm unlovable, to actually I'm loving myself the most by creating boundaries. I'm not responsible for other people's moods. I'm responsible for mine. I'm responsible for my energy. So yeah, that concept of responsibility really comes through for me, and ownership. Like, it was fun doing these, like, you know, this exercise was like just really appreciating myself in where I'm at as the owner of my life.
Beautiful. Saying, like, I love claiming that. It, you know? Yes. Yes. Feel, and that is a feeling of safety unto us, aside from whatever happens on the outside. Sheila.
Hi. So I'm doing a lot of my own work, of course, as we all always are. And one of the things I've noticed is that security is also on the values list. And I tend to put it right up in my top 3 to 5, but I'm realizing how much of that is fear-based and fear-driven that I put security as maybe my number one top value. How do you come to terms with that and pick apart the fear from, is that even a real value or for me, or am I truly just running on fear?
Yeah, it's such a good question. So again, I hate to keep on saying when we get to the actual technique next week, but in the technique, you'll see, like, in a very loving and friendly and compassionate way, we get to lean in to the part, for example, that is making security a priority without judging. Is it fear? Is it this? You know, whatever, without judging it. And through the deepening of the relationship, we can start to suss out, what about this is right for me? What about this isn't right for me? And go from there.
Okay, thank you.
I love that you're just even like starting to question it now and just, you know, be with it over this week. And I promise we'll get there. Okay, we have just a few minutes left, a couple other little pieces that I wanted to put into the everything that we are working with today. Probably many of you have heard this before. I think it is helpful in some ways that there's a great acronym for the word fear: false evidence appearing real, F-E-A-R. And the way that I understand this false evidence appearing real is that when you are experiencing fear, you are often actually looking for, searching for, and even bending some facts to find evidence, any evidence in any little experience, scenario, word in an email, glance that somebody gives you, etc., to confirm the fear. Right? So when we're experiencing fear, we're looking for any kind of evidence to confirm the fear. But that being said, evidence isn't always real, right? It can be false evidence. It's just that your ego is looking for confirmation of what it's afraid of. And so it's making the evidence real, right? So for example, one fear that I have been working with for decades, and I have a feeling I will continue to be working with for decades in my own life, is the fear of people hating me. It is a very big one for me. And when I am not in a right relationship with that fear, it can motivate some self-sabotage, but mostly just feeling awful. And when I am in that place of not it being in right relationship with the fear, if someone doesn't email me back right away, I decide that they hate me. If, you know, somebody says something and there's one word off that makes me think maybe they, right? It's like, they hate me. I'm just looking for evidence in all the places. All of those things could be evidence that I'm hated, but it could be mean so many other things too. Someone's on vacation, or they were having a bad day, or they misunderstood, right? Like, whatever it is. So just to think about for yourself, are there places where you are doing this, where you are finding evidence and that you are finding false evidence and making it real in order to validate the fear? And Bruce is saying in the chat, another acronym is F everything and run. I love that. Yes.
Sorry, I was worried that was going to be inappropriate, but I needed to share it.
It's great. Right, so it's good to be aware of that, right? And to help our clients be aware of when they're creating false, you're taking evidence that's false and making it real. And Victoria is saying in the chat that it relates to filters and bias 100%, right? And also we want to check that as practitioners, if we have that fear and X, Y, and Z happens for a client, that we are not jumping to conclusions that it means X, Y, or Z for them, right? They're checking that filter for us. Okay, last piece, I just want to share one of the handouts that you'll get that goes along with our class today as I go through under some of the top underlying fears for people. You can look over it, and maybe we'll actually backtrack a little bit next week and talk a little bit about some of them. Just to say, it's not an exhaustive list when you look at it. And the fears on that underlying list are not, they're not the surface level fear. So fear of making a video, fear of putting yourself on online dating, et cetera. It's what the fear underneath that is for folks. I like to kind of go through some of the underlying fears because as practitioners, it's just good for us to know what some of those top fears are. So you can take a look for yourself and then we'll circle back next week. Okay. I'd love for everyone to take a moment and write down, what are you really taking from our time together today? What are some of personal and practitioner wise? This is a big call. We looked at a lot of really big, important pieces and foundational principles today. So excited to get to the actual technique next time. But anyway, what are some things that you are taking for yourself as a practitioner from our time together today? Chenji is saying how much this works into attachment theory. Marla's saying, the connection between a feeling of safety and trust. Yes. Love to hear a voice on this too. What are you taking from our time together today? What's feeling really important and poignant for you? Kristen is saying how very normal it is to experience fears. And then the assessments of risk. Good, Sharon.
Hello. There's something about the normalization is a real big takeaway for me. Not that I didn't know that before. It's that reminder of, come on, everyone has fear. It's part of being an animal, let alone anything else.
Yes.
And that balance for me around when protection is our absolute sanctity, that fear brings us the protection and it is actually our best bedfellow. And then when it goes into shadow and when it can become the enemy and kind of keeping that balance that then allows the intuition to come through. So all those pieces interwoven together. And it's been really clear to see those divisions, if you like, and then bringing it back into one. So yeah, thank you for all of those little gems today.
Yeah, you're so welcome. Yes to all of that. And just to underscore and double down again on the normalizing piece. I didn't say this explicitly earlier. I think somebody said it in the chat, and I want to be really explicit. I believe that one of the responsibilities of our jobs as practitioners is to support our clients to understand that fear is normal so that they don't feel that they are not whole and complete or that there is something wrong with them because they're experiencing it. Golda is remembering that sometimes you're more accepting of other people's fears and harder on your own. Yep. Susan B is remembering again, fear is normal and to be comfortable, to be perpetually in the mystery. Yes. And we're going to do a whole call on the mystery later down the road. Susan is taking greater compassion for yourself when fear arises. Yes. And that is ultimately one of the goals here, right? To have more self-compassion and self-love in all of it. Jaya is taking that you might be finding false evidences in certain incidents. Yeah, I'm so glad to help co-create awareness on that. So big. All right, everyone, I'm sending you love. We're not going to do practice session. We haven't learned the technique yet, so we're not going to do partner practice sessions yet on the technique. If you're meeting with your partner over the next few weeks, continue to work on everything else we've been working on. And then next week, we'll learn the technique. Sending you all lots of love. Hi. Oh, Dawn, I don't understand your question in the chat. Do you want to come on voice to voice and ask me?
Hi there.
Hi.
Thanks for seeing that. I was just looking at the list on homework or the printout, top 11 underlying fears.
Mm-hmm.
And then it says deeper dive. You can complete this section after the resistance workshop.
Yeah. So our resistance, we have a longer session for the resistance workshop, and it is on September 19th from 11 to 2 Eastern. Hopefully it's already on everybody's calendar. It's been scheduled since the beginning of the program. Sometimes in Sacred Depths, I teach resistance archetypes first and then befriend your fear. Sometimes I flip it and teach befriend your fear first and then resistance archetypes. So that's probably why that's on there. But it's like those two modules are really companion modules, it kind of all comes together after that.
Okay, great. Thank you for that.
Yeah, glad you asked. All right, sending lots
of love. All right. Thank you so much. Bye.
Bye.